Thanks for listening to Dusty and Cam podcast, brought to you on the fan by your local Les Schwab Tire Center. Doing the right thing since 1952.
This is Dusty and Cam in the morning.
Man, those two really hate each other. That feud's like Biggie Tupac level. Maybe even Morgan Freeman, Shailene Woodley level.
With Dusty Hera.
I'm not hygienic. I don't wipe properly. I lack style.
And the man who accepted impermissible teriyaki benefits as a college All-American, Cam Cleland.
Why does anybody in the world ever eat anything but breakfast food?
People are idiots, Ron.
Dusty and Cam in the morning on 1080 The Fan.
All right, 55305, that's fan text line. Coming up Monday, the next show that we have, the text line will change. 503-250-1080. That's 503-250-1080. Program it in your phones, okay, to the fan text line or the fan. You can call us on that number. You can text us on that number, whatever. Just program it in your phone. 503-250-1080. 80.
Aight.
All right, where are we at with Major League Baseball right now? This is an interesting conundrum that the league is in. We talked about how the Oakland A's basically cut everybody in their minor league system at the beginning of the week, and it was a terrible look for the Oakland A's.
Man.
Especially on the heels of them not being able to pay rent.
And now it's getting worse.
Yeah, well, minor league baseball yesterday saw hundreds of players get cut. There's a potential of hundreds more to be cut.
Almost 1,000, they're saying.
Today, yeah. And it should be noted that yesterday, it was different than what the Oakland A's did, okay? Basically, what happened yesterday is Major League Baseball teams made the cuts that usually happen at the end of spring training, but never happened because COVID-19 mm-hmm. happened, and they were like, all right, when are we going to come back? We're just going to keep everybody on rosters right now. And then yesterday was the hundreds of players that they were going to probably get cut by their teams regardless of what happened. The next couple hundred are going to be for cost-cutting measures in Major League Baseball. And that is what is sad. Minor League Baseball is in a tough spot. You're looking at everything that Minor League Baseball depends on. They don't have TV money to bank on.
No,
they are all fans in the stands, and this could get ugly for a lot of teams.
Yeah, it really could. I think, you know, it was something this source came at. Buster Olney just he tweeted this about an hour ago, and this comes from David Price. David Price will now pay out of his own money $1,000 during the month of June to each minor league player in the Dodgers system. 40-man rosters not included.
How awesome is that?
According to the multiple sources, it's one of the acts that he's doing as a Dodger. But, you know, that's looking at guys that have the means and willing to pay these. I know you were talking about $400 a week. I think that – who was it with the club that the Mariners came out and said that they're going to continue to pay $400 a week. You know, Oakland's not going to do it. Some teams are more well-off than others. And the argument – and I heard this morning, too, about what Major League Baseball – and Scott Boras – talked about it, and he sent out his letter to all his athletes. And, you know, Scott Boras is pretty powerful, wouldn't you say?
He's the most powerful agent in baseball. He's the most powerful
Could he be the most powerful agent in all of sports?
Yeah.
I mean, think about how much money he represents.
Yeah.
Staggering. I mean, Garrett Cole's contract, every big contract he owns. It's nuts.
His influence in Major League Baseball is massive as well, because he's the most powerful non-player executive or league official. Like somebody that is not directly tied to Major League Baseball, he is the most powerful person.
So Scott Boras came out and he sent a letter to a lot of his players, says don't fund these owners, which the fear was that Trevor Bauer was back and forth with Scott Boras saying keep out of the meddling of Major League Baseball. And and Trevor Bauer's about as... I mean, he's fun to follow, and he's also very outspoken and on the Twitter sphere because he's going to call people out. He doesn't really care.
He's a little Looney Tunes too. He's got some outside.
Well, anybody that plays with a drone is kind of loony anyway. So I'm calling you out right now.
Wow, blanket statement.
I know. But anyway, Scott Boras sent out his letter and said, "Let's not support these owners." And here's his description why. And let me help you with this because I haven't thought about this in a long time. But this is quite as clear. What's happened over the last decade or so, or two decades, with owners? They've gotten huge stadiums. And how did they fund that? They got loans. Loans from who? I certainly don't have that information. Venture capital, big banks. Did the league loan them tons of money to build these new stadiums? Well, guess what these new stadiums and these new facilities all have? Mortgage payments, rent. They have a lot of money invested from outside investors. Some of these owners are going, well, we got to pay these things. We got to pay this stuff. That's not on the players.
Mm-mm.
That's on you. The league told the owners, here, take this money and invest it and then build and build. If you build it, they will come. The players don't get any of that revenue sharing. Remember, baseball is not a revenue sharing sport. It's not a 50-50 sport. It doesn't work that way. They haven't negotiated. It's a capless sport. So the owners just go, fine, we'll invest in all this. We'll take all this money and we're going to buy all these new shiny toys. And then the players will have this stuff and then we'll do that. Now the owners are coming back saying, well, we can't make our payments. So players, you need to take the cuts. Well, it depends on how you look at it. You go, do I need a nice house? If I'm to play in it, do the players care what kind of house they play in? Sure, probably, but they didn't make the decision to spend $450. Mm-hmm. They certainly didn't make the decision like they did in Atlanta to build a beautiful stadium in one place and then all of a sudden go, this place sucks. Let's just sell it and give it away and then go build another one for $1 billion. They didn't make those choices.
You know what's interesting about it too is that the one group that you didn't mention is there's a lot of taxpayers that have also paid for stadiums, looking at you, Miami, you know, and put those local economies behind the eight ball. And look, if you don't pay those ones back, man, you're going to be in some serious trouble there. And that sucks for a lot of the areas in the local economies that are going to be affected. We've talked about this a lot. College football, right? What does that do for the local economy and businesses around? It's a little bit different, but there still is a massive financial impact around where these professional sports facilities are. And so there's a little bit of pressure just to get games back as well. And, you know, Major League Baseball is tinkering with the idea of starting with empty stadiums, playing at home or in a regional area, and then eventually getting fans back into stadiums. And the longer this thing goes out, the further away you are from actually getting butts back in seats.
Well, don't you think, as we're starting to evolve with this is becoming a super region. I know Texas came out and said that they're going to allow sports to come back at 25% capacity. That's a blanket statement. We came back from this weekend, and this week has been the most change in sports that we've seen since the start of this pandemic when everything shut down with the NBA. We've seen the most sense of urgency. I feel a sense of urgency in sports because now the money is starting to dry up. In fact, it's starting to get reported across the nation that programs and things are getting cut. Things are getting crunch time with all of this. And I never believed I'd see the day when you'd see professional athletes across the country gone, jobless, like minor league baseball players. Never thought I'd ever see that. I always thought there was enough to be able to make that happen.
Well, there is one more element of it. Yesterday, Jeff Passan, he went on the Rich Eisen show. And he dropped this little nugget. Oh, maybe he dropped this little nugget.
I do believe when the players say we want to play, I do actually believe that. I think there are some owners who don't.
Really?
I think there's some owners who worry. Yeah, I think there's some owners who worry that playing is going to cost them too much. They're going to lose too much money. And that they would rather just punt the 2020 season.
Wow.
How about that?
Wow. That's a mega bomb.
You sit there and Passan said that he was actually surprised that, and I saw him on SportsCenter with SVP last night. Passan said he was surprised at the unified stance of the players and how actually unified they are and galvanized that players' union is on, we're not going to bail these owners out by taking even more of a pay cut. He thought that there was going to be an element of players going, all right, we just want to get back to play. We need any sort of cash. Let's do it. You hear that from Jeff Passan and you go, are you serious, owners, that you're worried? I mean, sports is a business, right? It's a bottom line industry, mm-hmm. But you're worried about setting your league back. I mean, think of what the strike did in 94 to baseball. It took them years to recover, decades to recover. Yeah. And I don't think they fully have recovered still from that 94 strike, you're sitting there and you're going to go, yeah, we're just going to punt on the season because we may lose money this
remember,
year.
Remember, it's a report and it's not, it's alleged, but if that is, yeah. if there are one or two, there's no question there's a couple bad owners in everything they do. I mean, look at the Oakland A's. Was it them? Did they want to punt on this or choose not to play? And not surprised that one of 30 billionaires is being one of those, well, it's going to cost me more to operate business than it is to run it. We'll just not do it this year and sit back and let it everything kind of sizzle, and then we'll just make it up on the back end. We'll claim bankruptcy and then reclaim. I don't know.
I really wonder what the split is, if it's one or two, or if it's seven or eight, or if it's 12 or 14. Like, what are we looking at here?
You're thinking of massive losses, though. If you can't have butts in the seats, doesn't that affect the better franchises? Doesn't that affect the Yankees, who have a ridiculously high payroll and have a great attendance number, more so than it does the Oakland A's or the Miami Marlins, who don't make a ton of money off the gate because not very many people go to their games and they rely more on the television money, which you would get if you did play a season?
We always get these valuations put out there,
right?
And you say, does it affect the Yankees? The Yankees are worth what, $4.5 billion or something, some crazy number. Is that liquidity? Do the Yankees just have $4 billion just laying around?
No.
You're like, oh, I got this under my mattress. We got no problems. We have a slush fund. We have our emergency fund. Just like any of these sports, you're only worth what people are willing to pay. But according to this pandemic, nobody's going to pay. Because you're not going to have any seats. You're not going to have any butts in the seats. You're not going to have any television if you don't have people working. If you don't have players playing, you don't have all that. So what? I just don't know. I'm not. I'm just sitting here going here thinking about how much Major League Baseball and all these sports are dependent on fans.
Yeah.
They're just thriving on it. You know how important you are as a fan and how valuable you are, what you buy your ESPN coverage on television, how you go there and get your crickets at T-Mobile and eat your spicy crickets. Now, you're hugely valuable. And these owners are going, no, they're not. No, boy. It's a big deal.
How valuable you are.
You are extremely
as a fan
valuable.
Right now.
Yes.
Is being highlighted by the fact that owners really need you. And this is showing. I mean, it truly is showing. And how many times they've pulled the wool over your, what is it? What's the saying?
Wool over your eyes?
Yeah, that one.
Drink the Kool-Aid?
How often they do that to you. In order to make, like, they, $50 for parking.
They use you,
right?
Is what they do. They get you.
$20 for a beer or whatever. Like, it's not $20, but $12, $15 for a beer at a game. Like,
you know what I paid to
they
park?
They are so dependent on you.
Remember I told you, you know what I paid to park at the Rams game 2 years ago?
Oh,
was
yeah.
Oh, wasn't it? Isn't it $100 down there?
It was $175 to park my car.
My God.
And watch that right down there on USC campus.
To go into the Coliseum.
$175. Fortunately enough, I had tickets.
Ugh,
crazy.
Gosh.
Crazy.
How do
you make that? Who makes up that money if you're as a fan or not showing up? I don't know.
I was reading an article in Forbes that said, you know, teams like the Dallas Cowboys and New England Patriots are going to lose more money because they do pull more fans and charge more for their tickets than some of the other teams in the NFL. Mm-hmm. That makes me wonder which owners are saying they're actually going to lose money this year and would just rather not play.
Yeah, tremendous amounts.
You know, the ones that actually have a big gate, those could be the owners that Passan is referring to.
Yeah,
which is a fascinating take on all of this. Do you think today is when the players give their counter proposal to Major League Baseball. Is it something that is even close to a deal that we get closer to a return of baseball?
Let's hope so.
JT Daniels has made his choice, and now USC is in a bind. And Paul Feinbaum does it again, tries to make the Pac-12 look even worse. Dusty and Cam on the Fan. Okay, I gave you that little nugget, the Forbes thing, about how many teams in the NFL are actually going to lose which teams are going to lose the most money without fans. This is how much money each of the top five teams in the NFL made just in stadium revenue, okay, for their games. This is from 2018. It's according to Forbes, because the 2019 numbers haven't been released yet. This is via Mike Ozanian of Forbes. The Dallas Cowboys made $621 million from stadium revenue last year, or in 2018.
Gross or net?
I don't see heel. I'm guessing that can't be
net. It could be net. It could be. I don't know. They won't open the books. Not surprised.
So the Patriots at number two, $315 million. New York Giants, $262 million. Houston Texans, $218 million. New York Jets, $218 million. Like, that is...
That's staggering.
That's what they're making off their fans in the NFL for over a season, right? So that's eight home games.
Yeah.
Well, I guess it's 10 if you count your two preseason games, which you charge people the same amount for.
Same parking, same fun, same everything.
Here are the top five attendance teams in Major League Baseball last year. The Dodgers, almost 4 million fans. The Cardinals, 3.48 million fans. Mm-hmm. Yankees, 3.3 million fans. Cubs, 3 million fans. Angels, 3 million fans.
Oh, I can do math.
So you sit there and you talk about that Jeff Passan mm-hmm. article. Which owners are probably the ones that are most concerned? It's probably like those five teams, and then you add in the Rockies and the Red Sox and stuff. It's probably them who also have like $200 million payrolls as well. Like the Yankees payroll's $228 million, right? I don't think it's Miami who's got a paper-thin payroll, and they don't have very many fans. They don't rely as much on the fans as the other teams do.
Well, I don't think
fascinating thing to think about.
Yeah, the league overall is not going to not play. It's just not going to happen.
They'll have, yeah.
They're not going to cancel the season.
Yeah.
All these teams and all these leagues are going to come back.
It's just discouraging to hear that some owners,
yeah,
but, even if it's a few, think that way.
Yeah, it's okay. I mean, that's all right. Yeah. There's always going to be those kind of owners and those kind of bags that don't care about the value. You could have the Pittsburgh Pirates. I mean, look how much they really care about putting out a good product.
They don't.
I really believe the Mariners try to put out a big product. They just can't find the right scenario.
Isn't that more sad?
No, I really do. I really think that they want to get to say, gosh dang it, they're doing everything they can, but there are some places that just don't. They don't even try. They don't even want to do that. And that's it's 1 of 30.
We can't control it. No.
I mean, sports are everybody needs a doormat.
At least they care. Let's talk some college foosball. JT Daniels.
Speaking of caring.
JT Daniels officially out at USC. He has left the Trojans, leaving the Pac-12, and now headed to...
Good for him.
Georgia.
Good for him.
Yeah. He will have 3 years of eligibility left, although the NCAA is cracking down on those immediate transfers, and it doesn't seem like he has a good reason to transfer other than his starting job was taken by Keaton Slovis. So this will be an interesting one to see if he gets all 3 years, but he still does have a redshirt year because he could feasibly... apply for the medical hardship for last year, and he could just redshirt this next season and still have 3 years to go there.
Well, and you can kind of see that the Pac-12, they lost a Stanford player transferred. Have it off the top of my head. Now that you have JT Daniels leaving, remember, quarterbacks are going to transfer more than
KJ
any
Costello.
Other player. Thank you. Oh, KJ Costello. And then you've had these guys are going to leave. They're going to leave because they know that as quarterbacks, there's only one guy on the field. Mm-hmm. There's only one guy. It's an offensive lineman. How many offensive linemen transfer? Not very many because you got five. And you can try to fight your way through that. And depth is really important. Quarterbacks are just they're divas. They're told that they're great. And JT Daniels came in as touted as anybody, hasn't he?
Oh, he's a five-star guy.
Superstar.
He was the number three quarterback in that class that had Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields. Mm-hmm. As number ones and twos. And he was, think of this. He was supposed to be a high school senior his freshman year at USC.
He came in early.
Yeah.
And I don't mind these guys transferring. Want to go to Georgia? Fine, go to Georgia. It's great. Go to the SEC. Mm-hmm. See you later. I mean, make the most of your opportunity and do that. I really hope that USC and NC2A doesn't get into their higher holier than thou moment where they try to screw everything up and make sure that these guys were going to teach these guys a lesson for wanting to transfer and stuff. I mean, that's just part of what we're seeing now. And the commitment of quarterbacks is so different than every other position. It's bizarre. And we're going to see more of it. I mean, how many guys, just think of the national championship game or just in college football playoff last year, how many of the guys were on their original teams?
Yeah.
Just think about that. Where was Joe Burrow?
Joe Burrow is the quarterback at Ohio State University.
Okay, where was Ohio State's quarterback?
Justin Fields, who was at University of Georgia.
Okay, very strange.
And then where was Georgia's quarterback? Oh, he went to UW.
Yeah.
What the heck? Mm. And so it's, but that is the new normal.
Man, Georgia can recruit a damn quarterback, though. They had Eason from Fields on the same roster.
Yeah.
They lose two of those guys, and they're like, eh, all right, we'll just go and get JT Daniels from USC. And they have Wake Forest quarterback.
Yeah.
Who transferred there last year, Jamie Newman, who was considering Oregon and Georgia, and he picked Georgia. But this puts USC in a big bind. Like, there's been a lot of criticisms of Clay Helton and the way he's built that program there. This comes from, I don't know what his real name is, but his Twitter handle is Shotgun Spratling, and he is on, he works for the LA Times and at D1 Baseball. But he tweeted this little nugget out. USC now has more scholarship place kickers on its roster than scholarship quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. They have three scholarship kickers, two scholarship quarterbacks after JT Daniels left. They are one injury away. And what, last year they had two quarterbacks go down. They're one injury away from... What does USC do?
No, I don't think that's... every school's that way. I mean, they're thinking about that, about Trevor Lawrence, and not everybody's in those same depth situations. Sometimes colleges are in better shape with their twos and threes than they are with their ones. I know that might sound crazy, but not for the elites. The elites are the elites, and I don't consider USC elite right now. They're elite in status of their history, but the way they're putting out and the way they've been playing, and they got to play Alabama, keep your fingers crossed, at the start of the year, they can be elite with the kind of talent they can recruit. But how many times have we seen college football players suddenly, when a quarterback goes down, the next guy steps up so quickly? Mm-hmm. Not only does he step up so quickly, he can be a freshman who's 18 years old and suddenly comes on the scene and just goes bang. You don't see that very often in the NFL. It's a little bit different. Yeah. It takes a little bit more time. You don't get those chances. But depth in colleges, quarterbacks aplenty. We have a plethora. There is a potpourri of quarterback play that we've never seen because of what 7-on-7 has done. That's the only thing I can advocate for. If you're a quarterback and you want to be a young quarterback, 7-on-7 play in all those leagues has helped you. It hasn't helped really anybody else. I don't really think it's helped much others. Looking good in underwear. But these guys are doing it more often, and they're getting more of the reads, and that's why there's so many great quarterbacks.
Yeah, there is a, like you said, that USC is no longer one of those powerhouse programs, and that is probably one of the sadder statements about where the Pac-12 is right now, is that USC isn't that anymore, because they should be like Clemson, who got the number four rated quarterback in 2019 when Trevor Lawrence was coming off his freshman year, and then in 2020 they get the number one quarterback in the country. Remember what's his name? Goodness gracious, the kid out of California. Remember that?
Ulele?
Yep, that's the one. They pulled him out, so they got they should be in with Alabama, when Tua's brother transfers, they're like, that's okay. What? We got like two more guys behind him. Right now, USC only has two scholarship quarterbacks on their roster, period.
Well, what
and
I'm
that's a problem.
Yeah, what we're saying here is not without statistics and not without truth. Mm-hmm. I mean, Oregon and Washington are better programs. And you want to know why? Out of the last, from 2018 to 2021 recruiting classes, Oregon has 42 4- and 5- stars. Washington has 436. USC has 35, Stanford has 19.
Right.
Those two programs are better. Oof. And that's a good thing.
Yeah.
And screw the ones that are in Southern California. You guys take a flying whatever. Oregon and Washington are better.
They are.
But they are better. And whether there's a polar shift, and if somebody wants to try to continue convince that USC is the staple and we need USC to be great, I don't need USC to be great. Does it help national coverage? I need USC. No, I don't need USC anymore.
Well, perception is having USC being good. It obviously helps your conference because, the Big Ten's better when Ohio State and Michigan are good. The Big 12 is better when Texas and Oklahoma are good. And the SEC is take your pick on when those teams are good. The ACC, it's perceived to be better if, Florida State and Miami are better, but they have the common denominators that the Pac-12's perception is so much worse because they can't win big games.
Right.
And then there's just bad news after bad news that comes out that, like, the Dennis Dodd went on the Feinbaum show yesterday and he said, quote, "I talked to a trainer last week at a Pac-12 school who told me the idea for the season is not to win, but to find a way to get 130 teams through the season healthy." And that comment is like, it wasn't about the Pac-12 or his school. He was talking 130 teams through the season healthy, you know, in talking about coronavirus and all that stuff. But the perception of that tweet, when Feinbaum especially tweets that out from his account because Dodd was on his show, makes the Pac-12 look so much worse. And the jokes just keep rolling in.
The jokes are keeping rolling in. And I think too, if you looked at the SI, Sports Illustrated they dropped their by Ross Dellinger dropped his, "The demise of college football in California may have been greatly exaggerated." And now the defensiveness of the Pac-12 and people in California and those of you that love sports on the West Coast are now getting a little defensive and getting maybe a little fight back. And I ask and I go, is that a good thing? You dang right, that's a good thing. Because you're the punching bag. And it's not like it's okay. But if you want to be the punching bag, be the punching bag. But unfortunately, that's kind of what college football is out here right now. So either fight back or you don't care. You're on one of two sides. But if you're going to talk to a trainer and a trainer's your source and that's what you're going to rely on, what is a trainer's job?
Keep people healthy.
To keep people healthy. He's not competing. Our job is to keep people healthy. So you, what perspective? It'd be like, what would you expect him to say? "Well, yeah, our job is to make sure these people are safe and I got to take care of all these athletes and, you know, winning and losing, that's kind of goes without saying, but boy, I'll tell you what, I got to keep these guys safe." Well, duh. Come on, talk to a player, talk to a coach and let me know if you'd be okay with not winning or losing because you'd be out of a job and you'd lose your depth. It's nuts.
Commissioner of the Big 12, Bob Bowlesby, speaks the obvious. Here's Buck with SportsCenter. I don't think there's an interview that Big 12 Commissioner Bob Bowlesby turns down anymore. He went on with CBS Sports HQ and did an interview with them. And he said something that perked my attention because it's so obvious, yet it feels like people need it to be told to them again and again and again. As conferences are opening up at different times, Bowlesby says something we all know, but we don't want to admit.
"It's largely a mirage, competitive equity, but we all like to be trying to do the same thing so that we have a fair chance to compete. And this is a situation where we're just not always going to be able to do that. And to the extent that we have an institution or a couple of institutions that can't start on time or perhaps have a disruption during the course of the season, we'll just have to deal with those things."
Isn't that refreshing to hear?
Leave him in the wake.
You know, but and we all know it anyways. Competitive equity is a mirage. And it isn't more apparent in any sport than college football that competitive equity is a mirage.
Yes. That and youth soccer.
That's a good point. Youth soccer, where if you have the money, you win the games.
Competitive equity.
It is a complete mirage of what competitive equity means because
that 13-year-old's like 6'8".
I'm just kidding. Wait, what?
You know what I mean. Birth certificates and all these things.
You have got Bob Bowlesby, the commissioner of the Big 12, just saying it like, look, out here in the West Coast, there's so much about, hey, will everybody start on time? What is the advantage going to be of starting early? And it's going to be a huge advantage. Like, there's people that are concerned. Oregon's first opponent, September 5th, North Dakota State. They are starting their voluntary workouts next week in Fargo on Monday. Mm-hmm. Oregon doesn't start theirs until June 15th. Now, most of the time you'd sit there and you'd be like, well, an FCS team getting 2 weeks of more preparation, that's not really a huge deal. Mm-hmm. But we're talking North Dakota State, man. We're not talking Sister Mary of the Poor here. And, you know, that is Oregon still should win that game and win it handily. But there is a competitive equity doesn't exist. Like Portland State, who knows when they're going to be able to start their practices and they play at the same level.
Well, what's the answer?
Break away like we were talking about yesterday. and just stop saying that we believe in competitive equity, because it doesn't even exist within the Power Five schools. Like, the same set of rules Oregon and Oregon State, they do play under. But the parameters are completely different based on your financial standing, your facilities, the, I guess, commitment to winning financially to your team. They couldn't be further from each other.
Should these teams get special treatment? Should the better teams, the more expensive teams, get better treatment and be able to start earlier and do more? The teams that have more liquidity, the teams that are really considered to be the better programs, the more iconic brands. Shouldn't we just immediately come out and say it, or does it make someone feel good to kind of be lied to with? I don't know the right answer on this one. I've always kind of felt like the smoke screen's as obvious as it gets, and sometimes it's fun to say, hey, Portland State, they'll get the same things that Oregon does, the same opportunities. No, it couldn't be further from the truth.
No, and when you're
but
talking
the reality
about-
is that eventually we'll just go, I mean, this is one of those separator factors that I hope college football figures it out. I say that with a giant question mark, but I don't want it to be ruined because I love the sport. I don't want it to go to some place where it takes away programs for small colleges and local communities and all that. We're at that point.
Mm-hmm. In California is a great example of this, and it's an interesting case study, because if you look at the states that border it, you know, within the Pac-12 footprint, Arizona is wide open. So Arizona State, they're going to be able to practice. Mm-hmm. June 15, we know that Oregon and Oregon State are on pace to have their players back on campus and be guys that can play, or at least lift weights on campus.
Yeah.
In the state of California, who knows when that opportunity is going to be there for them, because it's a long time until that happens.
Remember how you always say fairs for pigs and horses? That's what the fair is for. That's when you shine.
I think that's what you say quite often.
Oh,
and
sorry.
I like that. That's one of my favorite comments out of you. Well, one of your camisms.
Well, fairs are for pigs and horses to shine. It's not for sports. Sports is no such thing. There's no balance in it. College football couldn't be a better example of it. I mentioned about recruits, and just we're trying to figure out what's fair and what isn't, but the reality is that everybody's at a different playing level, and we're trying to be competitive balance with equal money in the Pac-12 and equal money for all these college football. But here it is. I mentioned 4-star, 5 recruits. Mm-hmm. Oregon's gets 42, leads the conference since 2018 to 2021. Washington has 36, USC has 35. Here comes the massive drop-off of talent. Massive drop-off. Arizona, 15. UCLA, 15. Utah, 11. Cal, 7. Mm-hmm. Colorado, 5. Wazoo, 2. Oregon State, 1. Arizona, 1. That's from 2018 to 2021. If that's not a bigger, what's the big word here? Condemnation? Towards imbalance, I don't know what is. You can't win without talent. You can't win without money. And those three teams, Oregon, Washington, and USC, have all the money in this conference.
And that isn't to say that you can't, like, that isn't to say, like, what's the point?
You can win a bowl game with those other teams.
But you can come close to winning conference championships and catching lightning in a bottle. And if you do, it's not an every year. If you're talking sustainability,
yeah, that's what we're talking about.
Equity is, right? Yeah. Because you mentioned Washington State, they were a game away from being in the conference championship game, right?
Sure.
If Woody Dixon doesn't place a phone call to the replay booth against USC, you know, Washington State is a one-loss team to UW in the Apple Cup, and that is completely different. Yeah. Nobody's saying that. You can't look at how good Cal is expected to be this year.
Yes.
But sustainability and staying on top, in being a standard bearer for your conference, that's rare, and it's not equitable across college football.
No, and that's the crazy imbalance of it. That's where you say what did you call it? What did you call?
What did I call what?
At the start of the segment. What was your comment about what we're all being?
It's a mirage.
Mirage.
Competitive equity is a mirage.
Competitive equity. Like, hey, we're all equal here. We're all equal.
Mm-hmm.
Well, football is, I think, one of the only sports where you can be an underdog and come. You can be Boise State, and you can come out of nowhere, and you can be Central Florida, and you can one off these things. But I think college football needs to separate to create more of, you know what? We value that. We value you can be the one offs. let's give you something of your own, but let's take the elites and put them together.
The KBO is bringing us great entertainment, if you're paying attention to it. And we hearken back to a day, and it's an old memory, but a great memory from the game of golf. Dusty and Cam on the Fan. Here's a fantastic tweet by our friends over at Baseballism. Does anyone else feel like over the last 2.5 months, we've been in an 0-2 count and fouled off about 100 pitches?
Good analogy.
It's pretty good. What's your approach in 0-2 count, Buck? What's your approach? You choke up? You crowd the plate?
Choke up and crowd
Why
the plate,
choke
yeah.
up? This is what, I've always been curious about this. What's choking up do? Because Barry Bonds was one of the best choker-uppers ever. What did Barry always say when he went 0-2?
I'm glad you added uppers at the end of that because, you know, calling Barry Bonds like that, we would have understood what chokers is. Mm-hmm. But you had to add the choker uppers there to make sure.
Well, Barry Bonds is, wouldn't you say Barry Bonds' most legendary choker upper ever?
I think he's probably the most well known for choking up. Yeah.
Yeah. What did Barry always say in 0-2? Get more, what?
More fastballs?
No, he just said, man, I don't care what you're doing. So I go 0-2, I go more aggressive. I go, yeah. I'm not trying to put the ball in play. That was the old mentality. He said, I'm going to beat the crap out of this thing even more.
And he also had the gift of one of the greatest eyes in baseball history.
Insane. I mean,
not just people
talent.
Pitching around him, but he never did the pitchers any favors.
Insane talent. Pitching. Freakishly gifted beyond belief.
Control the bat, man.
I wouldn't even consider his swing one of the most beautiful swings. I would consider it a very average swing. But just the ability to elevate and what he did at all times. I mean, there wasn't anybody. He never fooled, ever.
I read a thing a while ago that that basically was lending to kind of what made him successful in his greatness, and that having that shorter, compact, not pretty swing
correct.
Gave him an extra couple milliseconds to see the ball, and yep. he often credited that as being a big difference maker for him.
Super efficient, so quick and short to the ball, but powerful. It's one of the most iconic swings. Now everybody's trying to get these perfect launch angles and all these things. We want to do that, man. Just be on time. Who's the best hitter in baseball right now?
Jose Altuve.
No.
Yes,
Wrong. It's Mike Trout. And Mike Trout's swing is so short and compact and just like, it's just straight back to, it's just this little flip. He is so good, so short to the ball and massively strong. You can't, Mike Trout. I mean, Jose Altuve can't hold a candle to Mike Trout. Sorry.
It's bad on ball, baby.
Sorry.
Actually, it's Tim Anderson.
What?
Does he have the best average?
Yeah, he hit 335 last year. Yelich is up there.
Long swing, but very good. 329. Very good. Christian Yelich will also tell you that he stopped trying to worry about contact. And when he started to worry about hitting the ball hard, as he feels like, I'm tired of this contact thought. I want to hit the ball hard every single time.
Hit dingers. He hit 44 of them.
Yeah.
Does 97 RBI sound like a small number for hitting 44 home runs?
Not when there's nobody on base in front of you.
But the Brewers were good last year.
He didn't have a high percentage of guys on base. Didn't he hit two?
That's weird.
Didn't Christian Yelich hit two, or is he hit three? I don't know this, I'm guessing. Because a lot of these power hitters, they put Aaron Judge in the two hole. Of course he's not going to have a lot of RBIs. How many guys are on base?
They've got options, though. When you're the Yankees, I know. Stanton and Allegheny.
Yeah, I know. But how many guys, like, how many traditional two hitters look like Aaron Judge?
None.
You know what's crazy? When I was in Little League, there was a kid in my Little League. He was the best hitter on his team. And he was like, he was built like a house. He looked like he was 15 when he was 12. And they hit him leadoff because the manager said it gets him as many at-bats as possible.
That's a great idea.
Little League strategy.
It's a great idea.
I mean, if we can get him an extra 10 at-bats over the season, that could be another four dingers for us.
I think the two holes are the hardest person to find to be consistent. Hardest position to hit in the two hole. And it's always the most confusion because the leadoff guy, you know that leadoff guy. It's Ricky Henry. I got this guy. He's super confident. He's arrogant. He's cocky. He's going to get on base. And then you know the three hole, he's Ken Griffey Jr. He's Barry Bonds. And your four holes, Jose Canseco and Mark McGwire. And then your five guys, he's the guy that's still got power. And then your six is like, where do we hide the six guy? 7, 8, 9, your pitcher. Yeah. The two hole guy is like, who is he? What does he do? How do you fix that? Dual, he's just like, eh, it's the two hole guy. It's hard. It's hard. It's hard spot to hit in.
I'm looking at the numbers here.
That was my favorite spot to hit in.
Yeah. It's ballsy.
Well, you're inconsistent.
You're also a lefty too. Well, so it was faster.
I played on a lot of teams that liked to have the top, like the top two guys in the order, like do a lot of bunting, hitting and running, slashing, stuff like that. A lot of the kind of goofy, like middle school stuff that happens in baseball. Like there was a lot of that, and I was okay at that.
Bunting is the biggest waste of time on the planet.
No. Get you on base. Gotta get on base. Waste of time. Get on base.
Dusty Sports Hill loves bunting.
I love bunting.
Such a waste
of
time.
I do love bunting. Get a guy on. Then have Yelich come in and knock him in.
What other sport makes you sacrifice? I'm sacrificing myself.
Well, a quarterback who throws the ball away intentionally sacrificing it down.
Ooh.
Well, but you don't call it a sacrifice. You call it, that's smart play. Get rid of the ball. Live to play another day.
Well, why don't you call it a noble play in baseball? You're sacrificing yourself for the betterment of the team.
That's exactly right. I don't want to. I'm at that point. You're like, no way. You're taking the bat out of my hand. Tell me to bunt.
I'm
going to get you put right back on the bench, maybe.
I'm still trying to wrap my head around Yelich's numbers. 44 homers, 29 doubles, and 3 triples, and only 97 RBI.
He needs to get more guys on base.
Yeah. If you look at guys who have like...
What hole does he hit? Do we know? Is it 3?
I don't know. Let me check. But let's go. If you look at guys with comparable numbers, like Rafael Devers, he only hit 32 homers, but he had 54 doubles. He had 115 RBI.
The guys are getting on base in front.
Xander Bogaerts, 33 dingers, 52 doubles, 117 RBI. They're in the same lineup. You know?
Yeah. Like
it's that's a weird number for him. Have you been watching any KBO? Korean Baseball Organization?
No. I'm not up at 2 in the morning.
You're up at 4. It's when the games.
I'm
got games
up.
On then.
I'm waking up.
We've got KBO is bringing us some really great moments, in my opinion. I mean, it's fantastic. And they have bought all in to being in America and on American television. Because the KBO released this little jingle for ESPN. I don't have to tell you who it's about because it's pretty apparent.
Kalabichi rabichi na 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 Kalabichi rabichi na 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 Kalabichi rabichi na 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 ESPN, we are with you.
What a great lead-in. Carl Ravichi Ravichi na 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 na.
It's been great for that league, huh?
KBO is, we used to talk about the KBO because of their fans. Like they are the reason why the Marlins started a band in their outfield. Like their fans, their cheering sections are raucous. They'll have drums and
did
cheerleaders.
Did Thunder Sticks start there too? Like the clapping sticks, did that start there in Japan? The Thunder Sticks that started coming about in like, I don't know, 2000?
That's a good question. I don't know that
I feel
that
like
answer.
I saw them in, at least in Japan or Korea first.
But I am all on board with, I guess substandard songs for professional sports, whether it's, you know.
Miami has the Dolphins, the greatest football team. We take the ball from goal to goal like no one's ever seen. We're in the air, we're on the ground, we're always in control. And when you say Miami, you're talking Super Bowl, cause we're the Miami Dolphins.
Two Super Bowls in the 70s.
Yeah. And not much of anything since. Or.
The thing that always gets me is when I see this playing on our board, it's a 5.5 minute song.
Is it really?
Yeah it is.
Cut it short.
It is.
I just see Eric Dickerson dancing with beautiful Jerry curls and some soul glow in it. Just dancing.
Or locally, we had like, I won't call these substandard. Rip City Rhapsody or Bust a Bucket. If the KBO and their Carl Ravich song, or Ravichi as they call him, if that starts a trend in American sports of bringing back those songs, I'm all on board with it because we've lost our way with our great songs. When's the last one that we've had come out?
Has there ever been a great sports song?
What about, yes,
it's Bust
a Bucket.
It's very subjective.
But have you heard Bust a Bucket ever, Buck?
I have heard Bust a Bucket.
See?
Great.
Yes.
I think I've played Bust a Bucket here.
Great.
Don't you do it.
Great.
No, it is. Mm. It is. Mm. And then maybe Black and Yellow. Black and Yellow was a good one.
Which one is that?
Oh, you know.
I don't know.
That was the Wiz Khalifa song.
Was it the Steelers?
Was it before the Steelers, or did they just use it because it was their colors?
Whose colors? Wiz Khalifa's? I think it.
You guys are forgetting the Super Bowl shuffle, and that takes the cake of all of it.
Well,
Bears,
no, I'm saying
done.
But we're not going back to 1985.
Well, you said ever,
saying,
right?
No. I'm saying when's the last great one that we had?
I just told you the Super Bowl shuffle.
So 1985.
Yep.
Well, then we need better songs then, because I think Black and Yellow was near the near the top of the charts, or made charts at least. I don't know where it peaked, but that was good. We have the Sup With You Girl, those guys.
Oh yeah, I love
I
my
smell
ducks.
Roses. I love my ducks. Yeah, Return of the Quack. They also made two, but those went viral nationally. We haven't had. I mean, we haven't had any. I was surprised that the Warriors run didn't get a song, or at least the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Hmm.
But the KBO maybe bringing it back, baby. Bring back great sports songs. Let's go.
Should Major League Baseball have taken some of those things from the KBO, like cheerleaders?
100% they should.
I've actually thought for a long time baseball is the sport that maybe lends itself the most, because there's so much downtime and inaction like between pitches. Whereas, mm-hmm. I mean, I guess they make sense in the other sports there too, but it seems like baseball, you have the top of the dugout as a platform. You know, there's a stage right in front of you, and then they can stop between pitches.
But we have the tall mascot races that are always funny.
Love those. Love
those. We have the freeze. We have the freeze. Can you beat the freeze? Where is it? Nobody can beat the freeze.
See, and that's great. But you have, for like basketball cheerleaders, the game is continuous action, so they just sit on the baseline most of the time and wave their pom-poms.
You do have time.
And then they do in during timeouts. Yeah. And then not even at halftime anymore.
Well, they sometimes do. Yeah, they do a halftime dance. They always do a halftime dance.
Who? Where?
The dancers, the Blazer dancers.
No, they usually have a halftime show.
Well, that's what I meant. Yeah, whatever.
Usually not the Blazer dancers themselves, but they're usually in timeouts or in between quarters and stuff. In baseball, you have in between every inning, half innings, and then that action where you can, you know, engage fans during in between pitches and stuff. You're right. It does lend itself to have more cheerleaders than almost any other sport, except for football. Football does, you know, you're talking quarters, half times during games and during plays and stuff. They're still cheering.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you got cheerleading in baseball. I would sign up for that. And they should take things like that.
All right.
And sex dolls in the stands.
How many out of 10, if you just took a basic survey of 10 baseball fans, how many would say cheerleaders would work? Would be like, it sounds good, but do you really, out of 10, guess, do you poll 10 baseball fans, like real baseball fans?
Oh, like the authentic hardos would be, there'd be maybe one of them.
Yeah, no, they would never be up for it, because that's kind of what.
So that's a good point, is that doesn't baseball need to attract more kinds of fans?
Yes, they do.
Yeah, so I'm on board with it. I don't think it's distracting. I think it's great.
But then you look at the Marlins, who are trying that, and they had the worst attendance in baseball last year.
Did they?
Yeah.
Well, that's because they weren't.
That's why they're trying it.
Good.
All right, coming up next hour, how important is the deep ball in the NFL? But next, it's always awkward, often offensive, exceedingly entertaining. Our weekend, would you rather, next on The Fan.